his TV reception.
Welcome to the call sheet. This is Keith Coogan. We're coming to you live from downtown Los Angeles. This Tales of the Bone Machine, and truly, it's starting to look more and more like a big bone grinder out there. Last week, I was being funny, and I said, we'll do the Celebrity Death of the Week. And shit, we've got another one.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the show tonight, people. I'm stunned. I'm pissed. I'm also very sad. Saddened. We've had two huge losses. Quiet. Silence the music. Must cut now. We've had a couple of deaths this week. I was joking. I was like, oh, we'll do the Celebrity Death of the Week, and because it seemed like there had been a bit. Well. Real sad news to report. I'm sure you've heard in the news last day or two. Sage Stallone, Sylvester Stallone's son, who co-starred in Rocky V with his pops. He's a director, writer, filmmaker, and he has passed. Very, very sad. And, my total condolences go out to his family and his mom and dad. And he's 36, I think, 36 years old. Too young, once again. I really don't know what to say. I mean, there's reports on the story that he was hermit-like and had spent the last days. Am I bringing everybody down? Is this? I always start the show with like, hey.
It happened. Somebody died. It's something to talk about.
Well.
It's celebrity news.
I feel really bad for Sylvester Stallone. And it's like Schwarzenegger. He's like, oh, you've got an illegitimate child, you know? And I couldn't really feel bad. The press was all over Arnie.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
What? Like the housekeeper? What? Okay, let's get a picture. She's, got to be this like hot housekeeper that, what? Arnie, really? Come on. Then his kid, there's no denying that that's his son. He's got he's like, hey, how you? I am the Adam kid. I mean, what do you look just like him? And, Sage Stallone, too. I guess that's why he played his son in that Rocky movie.
Yeah.
Sorry, not to be a smartass, but... and then he didn't do... Was it the Rocky Balboa? He was like, I'm not going to play his son. Or there was another one afterwards where he didn't and somebody else played him. And then there's so many Rocky movies. The good ones. 1, 2, 3, if you like kind of camp. 4, if you like it, quick and very propagandist and very cut and dry. I think four is one of my favorites, actually. But you wouldn't get there if you didn't build on, 1 through 3. Rocky 5, I didn't care for. And paid money to see it in the movie theater.
Aw.
But still admired Sylvester Stallone for continuing to make movies and, whole like he can in shape and works out, and that's another thing I don't have the discipline to do. So his kid, oftentimes the progeny, the offspring of people in Hollywood, it's around. They're like, hey, I've got these connections, and they do it. They're in the business too. So I can't say. That, they don't know, by the way, with Sage Stallone, they don't know if it was accidental or a suicide. There are reports of a drawer or two with just pill bottles. And also that the room was quite a wreck and that he'd been living in filthy conditions, soda cans and beer cans and cigarette butts and food and stuff, and it just smelled in there. Apart from, the reason it might smell in there, but the police officers reported. Yeah, because I think they said the maid or something, knew not to knock or enter or even, you know, don't even fucking think about it.
Huh. Yeah.
I didn't know. For some reason, I thought it was a roommate thingy or whatever, so I didn't know where he was. Hey, Keith, why don't you... I was distracted by Octomom and her stripper pics. I don't know. TMZ. I love TMZ. If you noticed, people... basically, the show is me regurgitating the shit I see on TMZ and Nikki Fink's Deadline and Drudge Report. It's what I read, man. I don't read the Huffington Post. I'm sorry. Every once in a while, I'll be compelled and I'll go check, but I don't read the Huffington Post. But I try to, you know, spread it around. Drudge Report, not that I'm like a righty or, you know, don't support, you know, Bill Clinton. That's everybody got on the radar when Matt Drudge said, hey, Bill Clinton... this little intern. Yeah. Monica Lewinsky. What's she up to now? Is she like making verses or she's got a book? I don't know. Is there something? Monica, what are you
no
up
idea.
To? So here's more of the story. So he's found. They said he'd been living in Howard Hughes like seclusion. People hadn't seen him. He'd spent the last month or whatever, you know, in his room. And that actually they hadn't, it was several days before they'd found his body. It wasn't just, you know, oh, he died and they found him the next morning. It was like 3-4 days.
Oh, that's a bummer.
3 or 4 days. And that's because, you know, he told them, you know, don't fucking come, don't knock, don't whatever. I don't know, you know, that's so sad. And I don't know, there's many reasons it could have nothing to do with, you know, it's usually there's a family nugget in there to take a good spin off for, you know, there's something growing up or some circumstance that leads to addiction or abuse or anything like that. Ooh. Oh, it's a nice breeze in here. We've got some nice air conditioning coming on. Actually, that's rather nice. We've had such a fucking heat wave here in LA. Oh, it's been ridiculous. It was so hot, so sticky. Am I whining now? Am I sounding like a little minch? It was so hot. It was so sticky. We had humidity. It was like 98% humidity. And your clothes stuck to yourself. And then it rained one afternoon. It just got so freaking wet in the air. It turned into huge drops of rain and then evaporated by the time it hit the sidewalk because it was so damn hot. But it's cooled down a little bit. And how's that air conditioning working? Yeah. Oh, it's awesome, isn't it? It's okay. I don't think it bothers our listeners. Back to Sage. So law enforcement said that the room was disgusting. And Sage's mother had called the housekeeper and after being unable to reach him and they checked in on him and discovered the body. They say that it looked like an accidental death. So there you go. And that's probably, you know, I think most people that do like consciously or commit suicide, there's some sort of a call or a note or something. They reach out. So, you know, unless it's like an accidental kind of a suicide thing. So this was just, you know, for whatever reasons. We don't know if there's underlying health reasons. Like, for instance, when Corey Haim passed, he'd had like enlarged heart and water on his heart, all these like issues where there's many reasons why he passed. You know, mixing pills. Pills, I still hold to this day, folks out there. The pills are the most destructive and insinuating and lethal. They really do. They killed Heath Ledger and and even opiates in general. They are basically most of the pills that they got. This is Dr. Coogan with the Medical Hour. A lot of the painkillers are opiates and they're basically heroin or they're synthetic heroin and they act the same way. They have the same addiction or even worse. They don't leave the system within 24 hours like heroin might. And the synthetic ones are, you know, they wind around your spinal column. They fuck with you and it takes as long to repair from whatever damage or pain you have as it does to repair from the damage that the pills do to your body, your liver. So it just not, you know, and pain management could be, you know, a nice walk or swimming or something. There could be something deeper in your life, other than if like it's like for now, oh, it's just this tight back, this old injury I had, and well, what else is going on? Oh, I'm not sleeping. Oh, really? Yeah, I just don't have time to eat right. And I don't, well, that could be have a lot to do with how you're feeling. And so my advice for anyone, and because I kind of, as an actor, you aren't necessarily able to live and be a cop or be a junkie or, you know, be a jet fighter, a space cowboy. So you pretend and you have to go off of what is in your life. You have to go off of maybe experiences you've had. You're like, no, I've never been a jet pilot, but rode my bike really fast down this hill once. And that was, you know, okay, so I got that. And I'll times that by like 10 or 100 or whatever. But you have a basis, something, an understanding. And it could be sometimes even just research. You're like, I don't know what it's like to be, you know, a whore in San Francisco in the turn of the century before the earthquake. I don't know. So you got to look it up. What's up with Cannery Row? You know, I don't know. So you have very, very little go on. You can kind of extrapolate from there. And I would say that, you know, there's two kinds of pain. There's physical pain, there's emotional pain, and you can cover up with pills very, very effectively, very easily. But that's, I would say to anyone who's going through that or going through pain or struggling with addiction, once again, Dr. Coogan, and this is not, I think, harmless advice, and don't hold me to it. And if there's some sort of legal way for me to get out of, you know, any sort of repercussions or responsibility for what I'm going to say, is reach out, talk to whoever or the family, or, you know, talk to whoever it is that's the like underlying issue. Because I think that when you lose someone like this, and it's, you know, the sadness of it, it's like they're thinking of, you know, some family members too I've lost and some others I'd like to not lose. Dude, the Coogans are messed up, man. I can't even get into that. I mean, I don't know if the my listening audience is, you know, really interested in the family dynamic of like a multi-generational actor family. But my mom had a saying, you know, the skeletons leap out of our closet. It's bereft with alcoholism and sexual abuse and assault and tragic deaths and other from lingering to sudden. It's almost like the Addams Family. And perhaps because of my grandfather's work on the Addams Family as Uncle Fester, we took that attitude.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Sure. So we're like, oh, you know, gloomy swamp. We're like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't understand why everybody doesn't like the gloomy swamp. And we laugh at whatever the situation would be. We laugh at, you know, the strifes or the funniness. You know, even losing when we did lose my grandfather, I was like 14 years old. So I got to really watch the adults go off the rails. And everything, the power of the family and everything kind of switched over to my mom. Everything was on her shoulders, and she lost her mind. And it's just, you know, pressure. And my grandfather had been the, you know, basic rock head of the family. Just as if he said this is how something would go, we try to tend to kind of, you know, make that happen. I can't believe even, and there are times where my mom and my grandfather did not. And so I am my mother's is Jackie Coogan's daughter, and then I was born, so I didn't get that name at birth, but that's the relationship through is my mom's father was Jackie. And so there are times where maybe her and he didn't get along, like when she got pregnant and ran away from home and got married at 15. You know, little times like that. You know, I love my mom and I love what she went through to raise me. So every family has their own dynamics. I can't imagine what, you know, Sylvester Stallone, and like our family didn't have money. The point of it, my grandfather's story was he lost his money before he was 18. He'd lost whatever he'd made. And so we never had, you know, palatial Beverly Hills homes. And oh, look at this view.
Aww.
Yeah, just modest places in Malibu. No big deal. It was the people we had to kill to do that. So I can only imagine what it was like. But I... I also have to freely admit, I worked for Sage Stallone.
You worked for him?
Yes. In a very odd, strange way. He directed short film. And at the time, I had done and helped my wife, who's an art director, as free labor. She's like, "What are you, you're not working this week on anything. You're coming over to the set and you're going to be the set dresser for nothing." I'm like, "Yes, honey." So around that time, this job came in through our production designer. He goes, "Hey, we're striking a set, this hospital set." It's like deep out in the valley. And it's a short, it's a Sage Stallone short. Sorry, my wife, she calls him Stage. For whatever reason, she heard it wrong or whatever. Like a, you know, movie Stage Stallone. So I call him Stage occasionally.
Aw.
I know, miss him. Sorry, Sage. And it was this horrible, like, nightmare sequence at the hospital that they were shooting that was gory. So he's a little twisted little mind in there, Sage, little fuck. Go watch Sage Stallone shorts or whatever. If he's got stuff online, you gotta you know, look it up. He's got a interesting. I don't know what, you know, he went through, or I don't know if there's any sort of biography of his story. So he tries to tell it in his art. Well, his art was messy. So our production designer goes, "Hey, we gotta, you know, here's, you know, the pay for, and it should probably be like 4 hours of work." I'm like, "Yeah." And part of art department and set dressing and all that other stuff is you do three jobs. You build or prepare the set before, kind of like pre-do the set. You run it while it's filming, so you're moving walls or doing painting, where you're like fixing stuff as it's going along for the crew and the cameras are going and keeping continuity for props and all that other stuff going. And then there's post after they wrap something, they've got to strike it. So you got to tear the shit down or take it back or, you know, return it with a receipt to Circuit City if you're a low-budget filmmaker and you really need, like, equipment, like monitors or anything like that. Circuit City used to have a no-questions-asked 30 days return with receipt.
That's smart.
So you get everything. You get, like, furniture and you get, like, you know, office stuff and you get all this stuff and you shoot your movie and then you go back and you while you're shooting, you're like, "Dude, no, 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 we got to return that, so don't fuck with it." You use it up and then you go back, "Dude, it wasn't. Yeah, we tried to get the cable to work. Anyway, we got to return it here." They're like, "All right, great. Here's your money back." They caught on. People were doing it not only for films, but for Super Bowls and stuff. They get big screen TVs and stuff.
Aw.
So, so strike is part of it. And it's like, "Oh, tear this shit down," you know. That's fun. You usually have a few beers and it's like no one else is around. There's no film crew around. Art department is working on a movie before and after. And it's also one of the only unions where you can also be non-union and union on the same movie.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So if you're like sets, building sets and doing run, very tough fucking job. I know why they couldn't find anybody to do it that cheap, which was free. "Honey, I'll get you back for that." So we go, "All right, what's the," he goes, "it's just clean up this room from the, you know, they shot that day and clean it up, but, and go return everything." And some of this was like weird medical equipment. So it was really expensive and they're like, you know, "We got to make sure you have this piece and this piece and this, catalog it." And we're like, "You know, no problem. Fine. We'll go. We've done this a million for, we're doing it for like 2-3 sets a day." You're like, just, it's moving. That's all it is like, you know, and you go to help your friend move and they're like, "I'll give you some beer and some pizza. Just help me move, dude."
Yeah.
You're like, "Fine. You're a friend. I'll go fucking help you move. Oh, take this. Then, oh, stairs. Great. Oh, really? Oh, that's too wide. We got to go out the window. Oh, fuck." Shooting a movie is doing that all day, 12 hours a day for 3 months. It's ridiculous. It's cool, but you got more. You got 50, you got 100 people trying to move this shit around. So anyway, we were modest, like 3 people trying to build all these sets and move them in. And they're like, "Sure, we'll do this job." We go out to the hospital and we're going to go survey the room to see what cleanup. He goes, "Yeah, they did some gore stuff. So I imagine there's going to be a little blood or whatever." He's like, "Oh, they have plastic tarps up, so it's cool. You just like collect everything." And I'm like, "All right, fine. We'll go in this abandoned hospital deep in the valley. And like deep valley west. Like, wait, not even, I don't even think you call it the valley anymore." So we're there and it's been closed up. So it's kind of scary and there's nobody around. And we have like just a back door that was just open, or it was very spooky. So we go in there, and the film crew had just been there the day before or whatever. So there's like garbage here and there. So we're picking that up too, and we're getting closer to where the set is. And we can kind of, we're like, uh-oh. And we can already see like plastic on the door and like bits of blood on the side of the door. So turn the corner and look inside the room. It's everywhere. It's in the lighting. It's above. It think chunks of like meat and chick. They had like chicken livers and stuff. They were doing a scene where they were like cutting into a guy's chest, and they had a fake upper body and lower, and you know, or fake lower body and chest, and the real upper body, and like all this stuff was supposed to be torn out and flying around. Everything was on. Everything was above, like on the tops of stuff. So the blood had gone up and like arced. They must have gallons of it. For like 4 hours, this is bullshit. So we're like, well, we don't have any cleaning supplies for this. This is ridiculous. And so we're like, all right, we're going to go make a run to Rite Aid or whatever, you know, like Save-On or Rite Aid at the time. So we go there and we're like, all right, we need a bucket. We need a mop. We need bleach. We need, you know, this floor's clean, this cleaner. We need, gloves. We'll get latex gloves. We're like, all right, great. We have... blood on us, fake blood from when we were crawling around just checking out the set to see what the hell we had to do.
Oh yeah.
So we're standing in line at a Rite Aid with blood on us, with a bucket and gloves and bleach and a mop. Nobody batted an eyelid. And we bought the stuff and we went back to this room, and Sage, you sick fuck, we spent hours cleaning this place out. And we were like, we just give up on the bloody room and we go back out to the rest of the hospital and look for plastic cups or cigarette butts or whatever the crew might have left around. Oh, here's some tape on the floor. Let's just take our time and peel this off for a minute. Back into the room. I mean, it took at least 5-6 hours. And, you know, finally cleaning that up, cleaning up the equipment, getting it all back into the truck, and just exhausted and covered in even more blood. And then drive it. We actually abandoned the truck. He goes, just park it outside because it was so late. And we knew that we weren't going to be able to make it to the prop house. He sent us out there. It was already late afternoon when he sent us out there. So it is midnight and we're in a parking lot in like Silver Lake, where this PM Entertainment place, they had done all these awful B-movie, karate movies, action movie things. He's like, just drop it off in their parking lot. Lock up like the keys in it. And just like, you know, and walk away, filled with everything in it. So we did just that. I felt like it was in Reservoir Dogs. I felt like it was in some movie, and we're still covered in this blood. And it was like, geez, you have to wash it out of your hair. And anyway, that's my story. That's all I got.
Wow.
Yeah. That's our fun times with Sage. God. Wonder what the name of that was. Let me tilt it up. IMDb, film nerds. If you have the IMDb app on your iPhone and you're a film nerd, call in 800-893-9562. Is that the fucking number? 893-9562? Yeah. 1-800-893-9562 to discuss this or gory movies or working for Sage Stallone. Sage Stallone. Says actor Rocky. They've already got his date of death on IMDb. So Sage Stallone, he's got a very sexy picture. Oh, a sexy hairy man on IMDb. He's friends with director John Gulager and cast John's father, Clue Gulager, in his short Vic. I found another connection. I did a series with Clue Gulager and his son was like, cast him. Where I'm seeing a movie in New Beverly and Clue's there trying to remember who I was. But he's like, I love that. He always remembers we worked together, but he never remembers which show. So he brings his son up, who's not 9 anymore, but is an adult feature film director. He goes, you got to put Keith in the movie. You promise next time you put Keith in the movie. I love it. Thank you, Clue. So Vic, was it Vic? I wonder if it was Vic. Okay, actor... Ooh, Rocky V was his first movie. Evil Inside Me. Daylight. He was in Daylight. I was debating that with a friend. Reflections of Evil. Manson Family. He did some dark shit. And good old Vic. Yeah, no, I don't think. Oh, is that it? There might even be a picture of the bloody room. Oh, no, that's not it. What was the short? I'm trying to find it. Oh, I know. Got to look under director because that says actor. Director. Ooh, it's not on here. It is unlisted on IMDb. Unless it was Vic and they're just fucking with me. Could have been. Yeah, maybe it was Vic. Well, stage Stallone. Ooh, it's a nice looking picture too. Ooh, look at all the actors in it. Ooh, John Lazar was in it. Wow. Sorry, John Lazar from Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. Ooh, good, deep character actor. See, these I'm barely know some of these people and references, and I'm 42, so I don't expect everybody or my audience to, but look into it. The Beyond the Valley of the Dolls is not really legally connected to Valley of the Dolls. It's a total freak out movie. You gotta go see it. All right, so this is Short Attention Span Theater with Keith Coogan. And so the reason I call the show The Tales of the Bone Machine is because of things like this. No, I can't directly attribute it to the entertainment industry. I can't directly attribute it to anything with his father, who happens to be an actor, writer, director, producer, Oscar winner, and has some money. Money can cause problems. I was reading the other day that the reason that rich kids the progeny of rich parents, one of the reasons they're such shits is because I'm sure there's some kids of rich people that are nice. Haven't met them myself. Is that they aren't heard? No. Can I have that? Oh, there's two of them. Oh, well, I get a bigger one. Oh, we got a special custom from the place. Here, do you give me the CD for the new, artist? No, I'm sorry, we didn't get you the CD. Here they are to perform at your birthday. That fuck with you growing up, you know? And then what happens is you get out into the real world, like there's any real world in Los Angeles. There's no real, parts of town, but there's no real world in Los Angeles. You get out here into the real world and people tell you no for the first time and you're pissed. And I'm kind of, I didn't have lots and lots of money, but I did live in a fantasy world for many years, living on sets and living, and working, play acting, pretending like you're with all these people you've seen on TV, and it's weird to be a part of it. I don't know how many other actors are also fanboys or how many other people understand how special it is when they're doing it, because I had a fucking kick when I was a kid. So it is, the real world versus the movie world is a big, big difference. Even to work crew on a movie is nothing like the real world. Is there work involved? Oh, fuck yeah. Do you have to spend quite a bit of time preparing and, can you go out and party all the time? Fuck no. You got to learn 10 pages of dialogue a night after you've worked all day. You're doing 6 days a week, by the way. You have to, look good. You have to stay in shape. You can't have bags under your eyes or bloodshot eyes. You can't, put on 10 pounds during the shoot. And it's easy. Oh, donuts and breakfast. And oh, what? Egg, bacon, egg, ham, and cheese. Yeah. Oh, can you put butter all over the bread too? And fry it. And you have to because you're burning 3,900 calories a day. The scene where he, runs with the gun up the hill and the beach and in the sand. It's fucking hard to run in sand. Watch anything, even light action in a movie, on a TV show. So hard to pull off, and the bumps and the bruises and the cuts and the I'm sore and I can't. And half the time the costumes don't fit. Shoes are too tight. They're too big. Am I making myself clear? Oh, listen to this acting kid, this punk. Oh, acting's hard. I feel really sorry for him. Oh, it is. Sometimes it can be. And to be a crew member is really, really hard. You're going past the actor and putting huge lights up and standing under these hot lights in the sun all fucking day while this actor punk is eating donuts and can't remember his lines. So be prepared, people. That, making a movie is very insular. It's very you... all of a sudden you are working with these people and they're your family for this time. Every waking moment, you're all working on something together. So it's hard work. And they used to have a thing called rap beer. You'd be location shooting, maybe away from the studio, and hard, long day. And at the end of the day, hey, producer came over, brought us a couple coolers of beer. What? Cool. That's awesome. And it's like, hey, where are they? They're up on the grip truck. Okay. And boom, grab a beer, hang around. And they're still wrapping up and putting equipment in the truck and, you know, straightening cables and like closing up stuff and locking up and just having a beer. They stopped this because insurance and completion bond and insurance injury lawyers. Like if somebody gets into an accident on the way home and this was on the at the thing. So they just don't do it anymore. Kind of sad too. I had a friend who had explained to me what movie immunity is. And movie immunity is you're working on a movie and you get caught in real life doing something fucking absurd, like drinking a beer in a car at 4 o'clock in the morning. So, no, it's okay, officer. I'm working on the movie. Now, this works to varying degrees. If it's in Los Angeles, you go, oh, sorry. We were shooting up at like Agua Dulce and we had, you know, this. Totally apologize. I'm just a few minutes away. You know, thanks for looking out. Okay, we'll just be safe. Keep it under 70. Have a good night. It works.
Wow.
And because a lot of the cops want to be, when they retire, they want to be on movies as the security with their motorcycle and their outfits. And whenever they're shooting movies and you see them on the streets, out on location, in the city, they'll have a couple cops and they'll sometimes be holding up traffic or, you know, kind of generally hanging around. Number one, it prevents thievery of running up and stealing all this equipment. Sometimes they all got to run away from the truck and it's open. And movie immunity, on a movie, you don't remember the real world's out there. You're like, who are these people walking up? They're people in the world. And they just grabbed something and took off with it. So they have these cops there. And they help it with everything. And sometimes you need them mandatory in LA to get the permit to shoot for a location. They're like, oh, you want to film permit for a location? They're like, totally. It's $200. Like, really? They're like, how many days do you need it for? Like, oh, the whole week. Although we'll prorate you. We'll just do $500 for the whole week. Really? Yeah, you're covered. Okay. You have to have $1 million of insurance. You have to $1 million. That only costs like $500. But you have to have $1 million worth of insurance, a bond or whatever. And you have to have a fire permit. And that's going to cost you. And you have to hire two officers. What? Yeah, you have to. And here's what you pay them and blah, blah, blah. And then you pay into their pension or whatever. They're usually retired though. So you, there's a racket. If it's totally some little, you know, area and it's a student film and they're like film permits, you know, $20, whatever. But yeah, you got to go get a film permit. I don't think that's much of that going around these days. It's too expensive, too crazy for like real movies to be shooting here. I don't see them. I don't see as much film production running around the streets. And they fucking scared him away. And Schwarzenegger didn't help him with tax incentives for shooting in Los Angeles or California. He should have just said, you stay in California, you keep production here in California. In California. I can't even do him. In California. And if you keep production here, I give you 10% off on your taxes. And you spend $30 million on a movie. That's $3 million you get off on your taxes. That's a pretty good deal. Producer's like, now it only cost me $27 million to make this movie. So he didn't do that. So our film ran up to Canada, who says, we'll give you 20%. Fuck it. hire our guys, though. You can't take crew from, like, here. You have to, like, hire local and all this other stuff. But they're cheaper. They're like, you will work for, like, 70 cents of the dollar, eh? Then the dollar flipped around, and you're like, actually, that's more than our dollar. So, working on a crew, tougher than you think. Even the cushy jobs, even hair and makeup. They're sitting there so funny, hair and makeup are usually like, they've done their hair and makeup. Hair has got this big hair and makeup's got pretty professional looking, but light. And somehow they're not sweating in the middle of the desert. But, you know, they have to run up to the actor every 5 minutes with powder and everything and make, because the sweat is ridiculous. And they're under lights. So that's not fun. And they're on the set and, you know, the director will be like, fix the hair. Fly Wizard, the director of photography is like, I'm seeing, as soon as the backlight, director of photographies are always like German or something. Mm-hmm. As soon as the backlight, I am seeing, oh, maybe Viennese. That's it. Director of photography is always Viennese. I am seeing the hair. I can see the sunlight through the hair. If you could just take a little and wet the hairdresser's like all over there. Uh-huh, got it. He's like still trying to explain it because the light is, we got it, Vilmos. It's good. Every job on a movie set is really, really rough. If you'd like, audience, I'll go over every position on a movie, but not tonight. Script supervisor is rough too. Supposed to sit there and make sure everything's been said, everything's been shot. They have all these angles they plan. They have to make sure that they've covered them. And you got the line wrong. Some directors are like, I don't care. All right, I'll stop telling you when they got the line wrong. And they're done. They're like, never said the part about the thieves coming with the thing. Well, you fucking told me not to tell them if the line was wrong. It's continuity is important. They have to know every prop, every piece of board. The tie was off to the left a little bit. The hair was over the ear. Ridiculous shit like that. Oh, they picked up the glass. They took a sip between this line and this line. 120 page script, 3 months of shooting, and they got this huge book. It's ridiculous. Every single job on a set is tough, except sound. Three girls came out to Hollywood. Redhead, brunette, and the blonde. They're like, yeah, we're going to be in Hollywood. It's going to be great. And like, well, what are we going to do? Well, I heard the fast way in Hollywood is to have sex with somebody that's like in the business. Really? Oh, okay. What? Who are you going to have sex with? Brunette says, I want to have sex with the director because he's, you know, kind of powerful on the set. And I want to have sex with him and he's going to put me, you know, cast me in one of the parts. Oh, cool. How about us, you, Brittany? And the redhead is like, well, I'm going to have sex with the producer because he's the one that hires the director and he can just hire me and like put me in the movie. Oh, okay. That's cool. Cool. And what about you? They say to the other girl. She says, I'm going to have sex with the sound guy. What? Yeah, because every time I want to set, I hear them say, fuck sound. Everybody hates them. They're like, they got the shot and an airplane flies somewhere over California, hundreds of miles away. And he's like, sorry, we got to cut. The actor is crying and they're like, bad for sound. Like, go back and redo it. I've noticed they don't give a fuck anymore. And then there's pre-production, post-production, there's people in accounting. I love you. If you're out there and you're in accounting in the movies, thank you for making sure our check's clear. Very tough. Like when you're in the middle of Whistler, British Columbia, and they're still making sure all the checks are coming through from the production company in Los Angeles. Not too easy. There's a job where you fly with film when they're shooting over the seas, and it was before digital and all that stuff. They used to have to fly the film back for developing and, you know, and then fly the dailies back to the set so that they could watch the dailies at the set. And this is before video monitors and everything. So there was a job sitting with the film in first class. They'd buy two tickets, one for the film, 5-6 film canisters, and one for the babysitter of the film. You know what? Sometimes I guess a personal assistant on the set might be the easiest job. And all you're there is sitting there catering to the actor's needs. I feel like Burger King now. Yeah. You know, I gotta, can you go to wardrobe and you know, have somebody come back and, you know, fix this thing or whatever. So the assistant is just constantly on the schedule. They know the call sheet, they know the scenes, they run the lines with the actors. But the actor's on the set for a good 4 or 5 hour chunk. You like shoot in the morning and then you do a lunch and you keep shooting and you have to break your actors like every 6 hours. And so the actors are busy for a while and don't, you know, the assistant can kind of come and go and, you know, all right, you're on set. I'm going to go run errands and do the laundry and stuff and I'll be back like later. That's maybe one of the cushiest jobs. Then there's, you know, sometimes they're an assistant just for the movie and sometimes they're an assistant in their life. And then they also come onto the movie, and they inherit them. And they're like, you're paying them out of your own pocket? And they're like, yeah, fine. But then the assistant thinks they're working on the movie. They're not. They're just assisting this actor. They have no say. They shouldn't tell anybody else what to do or you're not even on the movie. Very weird. But that is a weird, weird, weird position. So, yeah, people out there, don't think that it's just easy. And then, the coolest jobs, I think, are like stuntman. Totally. Because when I was a kid, all I wanted to be was a stuntman. Half of the reason I got into acting was because of silliness like that. Battlestar Galactica and The Fall Guy when I was a little later. But I liked movies like The Stuntman or Hooper and would mimic them and play jump off the roof. Oh, God. And I don't just mean jump off a roof, like one story. We're at an apartment at the beach, apartment cheap. At the time, it was like probably $400, maybe $700 a month. So there'd be the apartments that kind of hang out over the beach a little bit and the sand's right underneath them. But there's stairs, like 20 stairs to go down. So it's another good story. So this is a two-story basically, but it's over sand. Dumbass, me and my friends, we jump off the roof of this. So three stories and jump into the sand. Like I'm sure, and you get those shin splints and everything. I really wanted to be a stuntman. And I liked special effects and makeup, like special effects makeup and stuff and blood. Blood. I got busted in second grade for doing a crayon, made a nice cool like cat scratch on my arm and it was all infected and yellow and pussy looking. All the kids are like, cool, I want one too. I'm like, cool, line up. So I'm like doing all these cool, I'm like, I'll make yours a scab. And I'm like doing all these cool makeup thingies. Like stop drawing on the other children. They're like, probably someone came in, another teacher, and they're like, why are they all the children injured in this class? So I was into that kind of stuff. And that made me. I mean, Keith Coogan is now going to be a special effects makeup artist. Oh, God. I need a reality show for that. Oh, okay, so since reality is now, I guess, become part of like Hollywood and series, even working on a sitcom is still, you know, a lot of the same things of working on a movie. But reality TV? Not interested. Not interested in being on it or doing it or being a part of it. I'll watch it like a car wreck every once in a while. Haven't been watching Jersey Shore or whatever, but that's a kind of easy life. Hey, let's go out and get fucked up and drink, get into fights, get arrested, get no repercussions, make millions of dollars in like special appearances. What do you get? Oh, 10 grand a night. What do you get? Oh, 50 grand a night. Just to go show up at a bar for 20 minutes, drink some vodka. Okay, that's what the fuck? I'm sure years ago when they opened Vegas, they were like, what the fuck? But this is a real big what the fuck moment. It's gotten out of Octomom hands, okay? We need to stop the weird reality. We need to stop preying on each other and wanting to see just the worst of stuff. I'm totally guilty because of Teen Mom 2, but that's my issues to deal with. I said this last week, don't buy it. Don't, you know, off the supermarket shelves. Don't buy the scandal. Don't buy the rag mags. It turns into car chases. It turns into problems. Justin Bieber, you kept your nose clean for the last week. You get the nose clean award. Although they did release the 911 tape of the officer, councilman calling in on Justin Bieber. That was an update from last week to this week. Ooh, Keith Coogan's got to double check his web pages again. Okay. And TMZ is reporting. Oh, we're on Sage. Okay, yeah, I'm not going to repeat that. Where was I? Working on movies, pretty tough. The reality shows, we're not, okay, stripper. See, this is the Octomom thing. Okay, I want to talk about this for a second. Octomom wanted to look and be like Angelina Jolie. I believe this was years ago. She had like an obsession with her. And did her lips and did her hair and all this other stuff. Don't know if she had the kids to be famous, but she certainly didn't fail to take advantage of that crisis. Be able to, yeah, now look what happened. It's not sustainable. And I know that kids out there have a short attention span and things come and, oh, it's the next thing, it's the next thing, it's the next thing. The thing three times ago is in a hotel room right now with a note to the maid that says, please don't knock on my door. So just remember that, and that this is kind of disposable stuff. I'd like people to start investing again in good television, good. Invest in Dexter. Invest in Breaking Bad. Invest in those things, those products from people that work really fucking hard at it to bring you your entertainment. If, you know, reality show, I know, I hope it's a fad. I don't see it as being so because it's the Andy Warhol that everyone will be, have their 15 minutes of fame. Totally freaking coming true. Don't pander yourself. Don't do something. Let's have some respect. Let's pick it back up again, people. There can be fine art. Think, you know, like a good cannibal. Think Hannibal. We can listen to music. We can listen to good classical symphonic music. We can be cultured. Can we not support Octomom? Please, please. Whatever move she does, if you are an adult male in Hallandale, Florida, please don't go to the Playhouse Gentlemen's Club and see her strip. Please don't. Oh, it's already happened. Sorry, that is an update. After months of anticipation, she has gotten up on a pole. And this photo shows her in a schoolgirl outfit. Do not go to 30milezone.com, TMZ.com, and see these pics. They're dreadful. Update on Lindsay Lohan's crash. She had said at the time that the brakes had failed. Porsche and the tested the brakes after the accident. They work just fine. They still work fine, even after the wreck. So they're saying, you know, it wasn't that. So who knows what happened with that accident. I always try to make my way closer to set if I can during the day, if I'm about to go to the set that day. Yeah, I wouldn't like an hour from after you be at set start driving away up on like Pacific Coast Highway. I'm pretty sure they were probably shooting right there in Santa Monica where she was staying when she couldn't be revived, and they call 911 a few days later after the accident. She couldn't be revived, and they called 911. They said they were shooting at like near Shutters in Santa Monica. This is just south of the Santa Monica Pier, kind of before you hit Venice. That horrible, long, hot beach. Ooh, awful. And filthy water. Don't go swimming. But we've got, it's gotten out of control. From Octomom, Lindsay Lohan, Justin Bieber, losing Sage Stallone, and not too happy about it. Keith Coogan does not approve, and Keith Coogan is not happy about it. There was another death. Hold on. Oh, yeah. Let's see if I can spell this right. We have another death, and this is... it's not who it was. Hold on. Now I'm... we can review for famous deaths. Oh, this is a great web page. Oh, the site is closed. Damn. I'm sorry, people. I just got so excited because I thought I found a web page that said famous deaths we can review. And I got really excited there. Access Hollywood's all over it. Andy Griffith, of course. Investigations into Sage Stallone's death continue. Here it is. Richard Zanuck passed away. Now, Richard Zanuck made one of my favorite movies, the Jaws. It's this shock you see. He also made The Sting, which is another one of my favorite movies. You may know him from a movie called Driving Miss Daisy he produced. This guy was class. This guy was Hollywood. Maybe also partied a bit. I don't know, because his movies tended to have a pretty real edge to it and hire some pretty fucking authentic people. It's not like you're hiring people from the cast of Wings, you know. The Sting, Jaws, cool. It's just cool shit. He's the only son of Daryl F. Zanuck, who was a famous producer at 20th Century Fox. Richard Zanuck, he came into his own and won Oscars and did it upright. At 20, his father had produced Cleopatra. So, you know, other films like MASH and Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, Sound of Music, Planet of the Apes. He hired Steven Spielberg to direct his first movie in 1974, The Sugarland Express. If it weren't for this man, Spielberg might not have directed Jaws, and then we wouldn't have had just the coolest, best movie out there. Jaws is still my absolute favorite movie. So Richard D. Zanuck, Hollywood producer, he died at 77. This is not, you know, you expect that. He had teamed up with, Zanuck and Brown. That's right. And they had done The Verdict, also Cocoon. Mr. Zanuck, God damn it. You will be missed. That happens here in Hollywood. People move on. But really, this is old classic Hollywood. Confession to make, I've been totally obsessed lately with the RKO 40-acre back lot. I don't know if anybody, see, the place was even torn down in 76. I never even set foot, I think, on this lot, but everybody's seen it. Mission Impossible, the original series, Star Trek, the original series, The Untouchables, the original series, Superman, the original series. These were shot on this lot adjacent to the MGM studios that MGM finally took under their wing. Finally, Desilu Productions bought it. And they did the coolest things. They produced the coolest shows. Mission Impossible, Star Trek being a few of them. They also produced The Addams Family. Did not shoot at that lot, though. I'm obsessed with the studio because it's gone. And things come and go in this town. And, you know, even the Chinese theater, this Man's Gramen Chinese, this is not the real front. This is facade. This is, they moved it. They moved the booth. They moved that. We redid it. We refreshed this. Nothing really stays. Everything is pretty transient and comes and goes. I was talking about this earlier with, you know, that next fad, or this is the fad of the minute. What about the fad seven fads ago? What's it doing tonight? That I want people to try to reward quality. I want people to reach out and try to float down a little bit, read maybe a little bit more, get a book. I'm being totally, I sound like a douche and I sound like, oh, he fucking smart. No, I love trashy TV just like everybody else, but I feel like it's doing something to us collectively as a society that, and I'm just as guilty of it because I'm part of the business and I produce shit. I mean, absolutely. I put work out there that I did just for the money and learned you don't do something just for the money. Do it for that and the money, but you don't do it just for the money. Have some balls. Take some risks. Put the pills down. Take some chances. Let people see who you are. Let people see you fail. You're never going to fucking succeed unless you try to fail. Stay at it. Create, produce, or die. Die, meaning wither, get out of town. Very tough town. I had a gentleman online, wants to be an actor and wants to come out here to Los Angeles and ask, you know, can you help me get an agent? And no, I can't. I don't know you. I can't, you know, recommend you to someone. I don't, you know, where's the reel? Where's the work? Why are you approaching me? I couldn't get an agent if I wanted to. You get very lucky when you get an agent. It's like all good. Unless you're really, really hot, you get sharked by like William Morris Endeavor. It's tough. You got to be union. You got to pay your dues, literally and figuratively. You can't just kind of step in. I get this asked. I got this asked by Lisa Bonet. I get this asked by David Duchovny. Not necessarily the agent thing, but how do I, with Lisa Bonet, it was. Lisa Bonet was like, how do I get an agent? How do I get into the business? This pre-Cosby show. David Duchovny was on the set of Don't Tell on the Babysitters, but he's like, hey, how did you get this deal? Or how did you get the agent you're with? So you never know. It could be someone who's, you know, done a production of Sweet Charity for their local, college theater group. And they were great. The point is, I absolutely took the time and I fed back the information. If you go to SAG, Screen Actors Guild, if you look up SAG approved agents, and there is a list, and they provide you, if you're West Coast, East Coast, whatever town you're in, You want to look up people approved, the agents approved by the union, approved, not approved by the union, affiliated with both unions. They provide it. And it's got contact information. It's got emails. It's got phones. It's got addresses. Do the work. Make the calls. Get packages. It takes hard work. Tough though, I'll tell you and I'll warn you. Behind my agent's desk is a 3.5-foot stack of manila envelopes that have never been opened, that have been thrown away, but they just haven't been gotten to yet. So I'm sure, you know, every week picks up a stack of 20, maybe 25, and goes through and the links and watches reels. And that's why I keep your reel short. Keep your reel to 2-3 minutes. They're not going to watch anything longer than that. Everything look as good as it can. Great pictures. Good. Of course, everyone fakes their first resumes. Make them good lies. Make them ask you, did you really do an all-black musical production of Oedipus? Yes, I did. I am Keith Coogan, and I have nothing to give you but share my experience. I love, you know, anything I can do to help. I've only had one path through this industry, and it was pretty easy to get into. So I can't always be the best one for the advice. I do know it's very, very, very tough. Be prepared. Be strong. But be vulnerable and open. It's a great town. It's a great business. Sage Stallone, you will be missed. And Richard D. Sanek, thank you for the work. I'm Keith Coogan. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And have a good night and be good to each other. Rest in peace, Sage.